changed our schedule a little bit. I know some of you guys are really nervous right now and uncomfortable, but that's all right. I like that a little bit. So we like to change things up for various reasons, but we'll do a little bit more singing here at the end as well to kind of wrap up our service, and I think that that's always good too. So we talked about being average, right? And we did some statistics of the average American, and I appreciated some of the feedback I got on some of those. But I got to thinking, right, we are not the average Americans, right? We are from the Midwest, and we know that Midwest people are above average as Americans anyway, right? And then from Illinois, too, we're even more above average. And so, or living in Illinois, I shouldn't say from Illinois, but because I'm not. But being in Illinois, we're above average. And so I decided to do some average Illinoisan stats. Okay, and just to preface this, this is a list that I got from someone else, so you can be mad at them. All right, and you can help me out. I need some feedback on this, too, because I don't know for sure. I'm not from Illinois specifically. I'm trying to integrate myself like a tree grafted in here, but you'll have to help me out. First, and this one is true, I think I know this one's true. It's you know you're an Illinoisan if you understand or know what it's like to one day wear an insulated, super heavy winter coat, and then the next day, wear shorts and a t-shirt, right? We know that. We've had that experience here recently, right? All right, some feedback. This is what one website says. You know you're from Illinois if you know to never ask for ketchup on a hot dog. Is that a true thing? No. Okay, that's not the average Illinoisan. All right, I'll cross that one off the list. How about this one? This one I'll need feedback on. You know you're from Illinois if you've been to Lollapalooza. Is that a thing for you guys too? Any of them? No? I'm striking out here. All right. This one will fit us, I think. All right. The average Illinoisan, you know, you're an average Illinoisan. When the Cubs won the World Series, the entire state won, right? You guys feel like that one, right? Hey, yeah, see, some of you did. That might be it. We'll get to some here, Raj. We'll get to some. There might be a few of you that didn't celebrate. Even us non-native Illinoisans celebrated with the Cubs when they won the series, just so you know. Some of us, anyway. How about this one? Anybody been told they have a cool accent? Has anybody ever heard that? That'd be awesome. That's cool. I get made fun of for my accent, but if you guys have a cool one, that's great. So this is maybe true for more than just Illinois, but you hate when people pronounce the S at the end of Illinois, right? Does that bother anybody? Like I said, I don't think that's just an Illinois thing. I think that most people hate that. So except for the people, obviously, the people that do it don't hate it. All right. This is a new one, and I don't know where you guys are at with this. I didn't learn about this until last summer. But you know you're an average Illinoisan when you've had your picture taken at the Bean at least once. Have anybody had their picture? We'll start there. Anybody had their picture taken at the Bean? One or two. All right. Again, I had no idea until last summer, and apparently I was out of the loop too. How many know what I'm talking about if they didn't have their picture taken? Just a few more. All right. Apparently, and there's this big metal, I don't even know what it's made of, just some kind of a metal, metallic, reflective bean. It's shaped like a bean. It's up by the harbor up in kind of downtown Chicago. And it's really cool because it reflects in a different angle because it's a bean shape rather than like a, you know, whatever other shape. But if you're ever able to take the trip, it's a cool bean. Or Google it. Not right now. But Google it sometime about what this bean is. It's what's the name of it? I didn't write that down. Does anybody know? All right, you look it up and find it out. It's kind of cool. So anyway, that's apparently maybe north of I-80 a little bit. This one, I don't know if this one's true or not, where we're at. But you've learned to assume that all slow drivers are from Indiana. Is that one true for you guys? Missouri, okay. I was wondering if we were on this side, if that was the truth. For me growing up, we were from southwest Minnesota, so we were about 10 miles, if that, from Iowa. And apparently we call Iowans... you call them Iowans, we call them Iwegians, and I don't know what that's all about, but we always said that if you're behind, if there's problems driving or someone was doing something crazy or someone was going slow, you always said, check the license plate, they're from Iowa. And apparently for you guys, it's Indiana or Missouri, I guess. I don't know where Iwegians came from. If someone figures that out, let me know. But the last one, and I know this is true for us, because it's all the only time we ever have traffic jams here, but you've been caught in a traffic jam caused by a tractor or a combine, right? That's the only time we have them. I know that's true for us. All right, so the average Illinoisan, right? And maybe you've done some of these, maybe you haven't, maybe you feel like you need to experience some more of these things. I think I do as well. But I'm learning slowly. I appreciate your guys' grace in that kind of stuff and in learning to be an Illinoisan in different ways. But when we think about average, None of us think we're average, right? And we talked about this last week. We don't think we're average, right? We think, well, if nothing else, in at least sometimes or in some situations, I'm above average. And that's just kind of the natural state that most of us live in. But the truth is, and like I said last week, is that average is what is most true of most of us most of the time, right? Average is what is most true of most of us most of the time. The thing is that when we all think that we're above average, right, it's kind of a moving target. So when we all think, well, we're above average, well, the target for average then changes, and then we all move back to average again. And so it's just one of those kind of odd situations as far as being average goes. But it's also true that we're, most of us, you know, we fall into the average category, and that's how marketing works, right? That's how when we go to the store, they have things that we want and that we didn't know that we needed until we saw it, right? You guys have all said that, right? I didn't know I needed it, but there it is. And so that's what marketing does. It targets the average person. And we all, at times anyway, most of the time, is most true of us is average. And that's where most of us fall. But what we're looking at in this series is this idea of how can we be anything but average? What does it require for us to not just sit in the average, not just be what everybody else is being, but to be anything else or above average? And what we've been looking at, started looking at last week, is what Jesus has to say about it. And in so many ways, it's just such an important indicator because Jesus talked a lot about anything but average or being above average. Actually, the whole New Testament does. But Jesus, especially what we're looking at in this series in Matthew 5 through 7, what we call the Sermon on the Mount. And last week when we began the series on the Sermon on the Mount, we looked at this idea of what is retaliation or how do we respond when we're hurt or when we're stolen from or exploited or burned. How do we respond? And Jesus says the average response is fairness. The average response is, well, if someone takes your eye, you take their eye, right? An eye for an eye or a tooth for a tooth. The punishment fits the crime. And that's what average is. That's what we would say the average person does. And Jesus says that's what has been said in the past, right? That's even what God commanded in the past. But Jesus says there's a different way to respond. There's a different way to respond to those things. When we're hurt, right, we respond with turning the other cheek. When someone takes from us, we're still generous to them and to others. And Jesus says there's a different way of looking at it. And ultimately what he's saying in this Sermon on the Mount is there are two paths. Right, there are two paths that we follow along. One is we can follow along. The one is the wide path. Right, lots of people will find it. It's pretty easy to travel because it's the natural state that we fall into. It's what we naturally kind of do. Right, we feel like doing something. That's what we do. That's the wide path, and it's pretty trodden because lots of people have traveled it before. But that's the average path. And Jesus says, no, there's another path. There is a path that's narrow. It's a little harder to find. And not as many people are going to seek for it and look for it. It's not as traveled. But ultimately, that is the path that is above average, that is anything but average. And ultimately, Jesus says that is the path that leads to life. And so this morning, we're going to continue down that narrow path. We're going to continue to look at what Jesus has to say about traveling that path. But two things I want to kind of remind us of when we talk about the Sermon on the Mount especially is one, there are a lot of people that say it is impossible to live that out, right? If we read what Jesus has to say in these verses in Matthew and 5 and 6 and 7, and even a lot of what Jesus has to say, it's impossible to live that out. We cannot, and we cannot. I would agree that it is an impossibility for me to change my behavior to such an extent that Jesus asks us to. That being said, and I guess that being said, ultimately, I definitely cannot do it by my own power. Right, Matthew by himself is not able to even come close to what Jesus asked us to do. Right, some of you can probably actually get closer, a lot closer than I can at this point. But Jesus asked us to do so much, something so extreme, and that's kind of his point. His point is saying, you need me. You need God to come in to at least, to even get close to what I'm asking for you. You need to respond, you need to understand that I love you and I have grace for you. And to learn to have grace for ourselves. But ultimately, then, his point is, it's not so much our behavior changes. I mean, that's important, too. It's important that we act differently, that things come out across differently. But Jesus is ultimately saying in the Sermon on the Mount, our hearts need to change. Our attitude needs to change. Like we talked about last week, fairness, our idea of fairness and retaliation needs to be different, or should be different, if we want to be on the narrow path. And he continually does that here in these verses. And this morning as well, he does that as well. And like we talked about last week in this idea of the gracious heart, a forgiving heart, of a changed heart, we talked about how above average people will exceed those expectations. They'll exceed other people's expectations. And in exceeding other people's expectations, that leads to relationships that are anything but average. And I think that that's the crux of what Jesus is trying to tell us, is that when we exceed others' expectations, when we do things that are on that narrow path that go above average, then we have relationships. Not only our relationship with God, but our relationship with others as well. That's above average as well. And so we're going to turn the page. If you've got your Bibles or a Bible app or want to grab one from the pews, we're in Matthew chapter 6 this week. And as we see Jesus shifting gears from how it looks to deal with retaliation and fairness, he shifts gears to looking at this idea of gratification. And how do we satisfy the needs and the desires and the things that our heart and our body and the things that we want in our world? Because we live in a world of instant gratification, right? We live in a world of instant gratification. And I just think that's so, so true, right? We have fast food, right? We have credit cards. We have the internet. On my phone, I can pull up, you know, any video or image or song or anything that I want right now. And we can do that almost anywhere. And we even, I guess, what we start, or what I whine about anyway, is when I don't have Wi-Fi, right? There should be Wi-Fi everywhere. That should just be always available. I thought it was funny. We were in New York a couple weeks ago, and they have, like, stations set up on the sidewalk where you go and you can plug in your phone, but then it also has a Wi-Fi hotspot. And in Queens, I didn't feel safe to stop and do that very long. I shouldn't say that. It wasn't that bad. But I just thought that was fascinating, that there's Wi-Fi, that everything is just available so instantly. And the thing is that we get so impatient that even we can't even wait more than 2 days for our package to arrive, right? We need it in 2 days. Can't wait much longer than that, right? For those of you that subscribe to Amazon stuff and that kind of thing. But, right, we have this idea of getting things right now. Now, as soon as possible kind of a thing. And ultimately, it comes across in this, in a chart that we'll put up in just a second, is that there's a problem. There's a price that's paid when we seek things now, when we want things satisfied in the instant. And Tom, if you got it there, there it is. So the instant gratification curve has two components. One is satisfied desires. When and how and where those desires are satisfied. And then correlating to that is the personal problems that come along with it, and how things in our life are impacted based upon how quickly and how earnestly we seek after the things that we want. And ultimately, this is what happens, is that for a while, you can go ahead, Tom, for a while, things go okay, right? We can seek after instant gratification. We can get things right away and solve whatever need we have right now. And for a while, things don't go too bad. And we can kind of manage the reaction. We can manage the consequences. But it doesn't take very long so that if we continue to make those choices where I'm just going to get what I need right now, that personal problems pile up. Or even if we don't resolve some of the things that we sought after when we were, you know, in that moment and wanted to get what we needed to get, it quickly snowballs. And those personal problems just exponentially increase as we continue down that path. And we know that, right? I bet I could ask every single one of us, you know, every single one of you, and say, was there a choice that you went after something and you got it and you wanted to get something so badly, you went after it, and once you got it, right, maybe you satisfied something in the moment, but even 5 years, you know, even a week later, you're like, oh, that was really a bad decision, and you're feeling the pressure, and a month later, a year later, 5 years later, 50 years later, that situation, that choice, and maybe it was a one-time thing, maybe it was over a season of our life, we're still feeling the ramifications, right? Maybe it's a financial thing. Maybe it's a relational thing. Maybe it's a career thing, right? I'm pretty sure all of us have something like that in our lives. And we know that when we seek after things quickly, that those personal problems can quickly grow as well. And so what does Jesus have to say about this? What is the truth that he tells us? Ultimately, we're going to look here in Matthew 6, verse 19, that the truth is that average people, average individuals, the average is being consumed with now and having little regard for later. Average is having regard or wanting what was now, consumed with now, with little regard for later. So what's Jesus have to say about this? Excuse me, in Matthew 6, verse 19, he starts out this way. He says, do not lay up for yourself treasures on earth right now, on this planet, where we're at right now. Don't lay up treasures where you're at now. He says, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves can break in and steal. He says these are the things these are the things where we seek that what is temporary, right? We think we seek what we can get now. We have this instant gratification. We focus on the what Jesus calls perishable, things that can be taken from us, things that will be destroyed. But we need them now, and so we focus on now. But he goes on and he says, but lay up, he says, lay up for yourself treasures in heaven, the later. Now is earthly, now is perishable, later will last forever, later is indestructible. He says, neither moth nor rust destroys, and thieves, where thieves do not break in and steal. That's the later, that's the heavenly. And he says, focus on the things that are later, the things that are spiritual, the things that will last, that aren't going to disappear, that someone can't take from us. Right? Isn't it great to have things in our life that no one's going to take from us or can take from us? Because ultimately, he says, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. And in so many ways, it's pretty easy to figure out where our treasure is. Right? We can look at our lives and we can take stock of what we're a part of and what we're doing. We can say, where is my time going? Where is my energy going? What am I thinking about? What's my focus? And that's where our treasure is. And so often it gets so easy to get caught up in the now. Well, I need to eat, right? I need to get something now. I need to get this now. I need to satisfy this urge or this desire in the moment. And sometimes we can lie to ourselves, right? And we can say, well, I'm doing all of these things and I'm seeking after all these things to provide for my family or to solve a problem in our world or something like that. And we can tell ourselves lots of different things. And we'll talk about it as we close here a minute, what that looks like. But we need to make sure that we understand where is our treasure. What are we valuing in our lives? And it's important to know this and to consider this is because our culture is just constantly trying to sell us happiness. Right? Our whole culture says pursue happiness. Pursue things that make us happy. Pursue things that make us make life easier and make life better. Right? The technology we have, food, fast food, resources, just about everything we see advertised tells us seek happiness. And it tells us to do it now, right? And again, most of the people in our culture are willing to wait is 2 days, right? We'll wait 2 days for that package to come and then we'll be happy. But most of the time, we want it now. We want to appease those things now. And sometimes it's a thing, and Jesus is talking about possessions and money primarily here. But so often, it can be an emotional thing too. How am I going to solve this pain now? How am I going to get rid of this hurt now? Instead of working through things and looking at the later, how do I satisfy where I'm at now? And it's this difference and this contrast between a focus on are we focused on instant gratification or are we willing to focus on delayed gratification? Because we know that that narrow path and those heavenly later things are so much better than anything we can have now. Jesus goes on in verse 22. He says, the eye is the lamp of the body. So if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light is in you is darkness, how great is the darkness. And I just think that's such an interesting passage. And it's you know, if you think about Jesus, he's always got to throw in something, right? Something that just doesn't make any sense in so many ways. And part of that's his point, too. Part of it's like, well, you need to take this and you need to wrestle with it. And so part of me wants to say, all right, I'm not going to explain this at all. You guys just take it and you just think about it for a week or something like that. And you can come back and I'll explain it more later. But because that's kind of the point, too, is we're supposed to wrestle with some of these things that Jesus says. But my understanding and my interpretation of what Jesus is saying is here is they had a view of the eyes being of emitting light, that eyes were like a flashlight. And he would say that if your eyes are emitting light, if they're providing light, then they can see well, that they can focus well, that really their focus is on things forever. Their focus is on things into the eternal. And he says, if your eyes are that way, if you can focus on those things, if you can focus on the spiritual and the heavenly, then your whole body is full of light. And ultimately, what Jesus in this context is saying is then we're generous. Generous with money, generous with time, generous with our heart. But then Jesus says that if we're not, that light doesn't come out, if there's darkness in our light and in our eyes, if we're not focused on the things that are forever, if we're focused on the now, then there's darkness. The song Amazing Grace says, "I once was blind, but now I see." It's this idea of blindness, spiritual blindness, is an image for being closed off and being focused on this world. And we become stingy and we become focused on ourselves. And so then Jesus concludes this passage in verse 24. He says, "No one can serve two masters." And Jesus is talking in context about God and money here in just a second we'll look at. But we can also say and expand that a little bit and say, we can't serve now and later. We can't serve now and later. For either he will hate the one and love the other, or be devoted to one and despise the other. He says you cannot serve both God and money, or we cannot serve both now and later. Right? He says pretty simply that we can't do both, but we all try to do both, don't we? We all try to say, well, I can get what I need now, but I can also focus on the later. And I think to a certain extent we probably can, but we can't do both well. In fact, the only place that we can do now and later well is in candy. That's the only place that now and later works well together. Do you guys like now and laters? Hopefully you do, because I have one to send home with you so you can remember what I talked about today. So this is the only place now and later works well together, and I love now and laters. I was going to put one in my mouth now, but that would be a disaster for all of us. So that's the only place now and later works well. In our world, in our lives, in our hearts, we cannot balance out now and later to a full extent. Either one's going to get the priority and the second's going to fall away, or we're going to focus on one as opposed to the other. And the thing is that we all need to wrestle with that, right? We all need to struggle with that. We all need to answer these questions that Jesus asks. Not the questions yet here. Jesus says this. He says, anything but average people then live for later. They live for the later. And this is the questions that we can ask ourselves. How do we know where we're at with that? Again, going back to, where is your treasure? Where is our treasure? And again, we can answer that probably pretty easily and pretty quickly. Where is our time going? Or what are the things that we own? How important is our stuff to us? If you go to go to Walmart or wherever, and you go in and come back out, and there's a big dent on the side of your car from the neighbor's car door, what level of angry do you get to at that point, right? Are you at a 1 or a 2, or are you at a 7 or an 8? That might say something about what is important to us, right? I look at my vehicles and I say, I might not even get to a 1 at that point. I'm like, it just kind of blends into everything else. But, you know, for some of us, that might be more important. I have other focuses. You know, if I lost some of my technology that I had, if you took away my phone, I might be at an 8 or a 9 kind of a thing, right? But we just have those focuses and those attentions. Where is that treasure? But then where is our focus is the second question. Where is our focus? Right? Our treasure might be a possession. Our treasure might be even a relationship. But what's our focus? Are we focused on what we can get now? Where is our time going? That's a big, big question. How do we spend our time? Are we spending our time to pursue happiness and comfort? For me, that's a big one, seeking comfort. Are we seeking things that will provide for us for forever? And ultimately, the last question we ask is answered by the first two, is who are we serving? Where is our treasure? Where is our focus? Ultimately says where or who. Or what even are we serving? And again, we all need to answer these questions, because if we don't answer them, if we don't say, okay, this is where my treasure is, this is where my focus is, this is who I'm serving, it gets answered for us. People will tell us, the culture will reveal to us where we're going with that. And we're going to go down a path, and ultimately the default place that all of us go, every single one of us, isn't the narrow path. It's the wide path. It's the average path. The now path. If we don't choose, if we don't make the decision to say, no, I'm going to focus my treasure in God, I'm going to focus my treasure in heaven, I'm going to serve him, then we fall and default to the wide path and choose the now rather than the later. And so this morning, we're going to close. I'm going to close with just kind of something for us to think about. But we're going to have an opportunity. We're going to sing a song. I'm going to open the floor again like we usually do. And you can come forward and make a decision of whatever sort. I encourage people, you know, if they want to pray or, you know, want to make a commitment and have some accountability, that's great. And if you want to come forward and say, I'm committing now to focus on the later, that is great. But the thing is I think all of us would probably say, yeah, I'm going to commit to the later, right? If I asked you on your way out, I won't do that because it's weird. But on your way out, if I say, what are you going to choose? And you're all going to say, yeah, I'll choose the later. But the problem is that we can choose the later now in this moment, this morning. But when we go home, are we continually choosing the later? That's the problem with this, is that I'm committed to the later. I want to do the later. But tomorrow, you know, in an hour, in 2 hours, in 5 hours, tomorrow, next week, am I continually choosing the later rather than fulfilling the desires that I have now? And so to close, to kind of wrap everything up, there's something that I learned as part of a counseling experience that I do regularly for myself, just because it deals with anxiety and fear, and I have a lot of anxiety just because I'm an anxious person, I guess. But one of the things that the practice is asking this question, and then what? And then what? So you take a situation and you ask the question, and then what? So we're going to just, as an example, say you're afraid of losing your job. Okay? And so if you're afraid of losing your job, you say, well, what happens if you lose your job? Well, then I wouldn't have money to buy things. And then you ask the question, well, then and then what? Well, if I didn't have money to buy things, I'd get, you know, I wouldn't be able to live in my house. I wouldn't be able to provide for my family. And then you go, well, then and then what? Well, then if I can't provide for my family, then, you know, the world hates me, and, you know, I'm going to live alone in my parents' basement. And, you know, you go down this path, and then what? And you just keep going down that path, and you keep asking, well, then what? Then what? Then what? And eventually you get to the heart of what we believe. No matter what the situation, no matter what the circumstances, it comes down to what we truly believe. And for me, I do this all the time. I say, Christ still died for me. Christ still loves me. I still have a relationship with him. And no matter what happens in my circumstances or my situations, I still have a foundation in him. And I think that's so important for us to hold on to and remember. But I wanted to do this in an opposite way too, to say that when we pursue something, if I am pursuing something, if I'm going after something, something that I need or want, I'm going to ask myself the question, and then what? If I got that thing, and then what? And then what? So for an example, and this was something hopefully it makes sense to you, but going after, let's say, a doctoral degree, because that's something that I struggle with actually at times. So if you seek after a doctoral degree, right, if I got that and then what, well, then people will think I'm smarter, right? And then, or maybe. And then what? Well, then I'd feel good and I'd be happier. And then what? And then what? And I could go down that path as far as I went, but if it's a true, honest, later type of thing, if it is truly and honestly focused on the spiritual and godly, when I ask enough that and then what questions, it should come back to Christ. If what I'm pursuing, that doctoral degree, that job, that relationship, if I'm pursuing that and I say, and then what? If I got that, then what? Then if I got that and then what? If it doesn't come back to God, it's a now thing. It's an earthly thing. It's something that isn't focused on forever. And so this week, I haven't tried this yet. I'm going to try that this week and the next several weeks just to see how that falls. And start to prioritize myself. If I'm pursuing something and it doesn't end with God, maybe I need to let it go. And so I challenge you and encourage you maybe to look at this week. But as we close, as we wrap this up this morning, remember, I need to remember that the later is so much more valuable than the now. It's a narrow path that ultimately leads to life. Let's pray. Gracious Father, we thank you so much for your Son. We thank you for the grace that you provide and the truth that you provide for us, and we just pray earnestly that you help us to give up the things of this earth and the now, and help us to live for the later. We pray this all in your Son Jesus' name. Amen. Worship team's going to come on forward, and again, we're going to open the floor. If anyone has a desire to make a commitment to come for prayer, to commit to Christ for the first time, whatever that is, the floor is open. We're going to stand and we're going to sing.